In reading the suttas, especially in the earliest strata of the teachings, of the Theravada texts, the teachings about mother and father are somewhat scattered here and there. And we see a few words or a few sentences here and there, and we see some stories about individual characters. There's one particular teaching that I want to call to your attention. And this is because in our Jewish or Christian Bible, we have the definite partly of our, part of our morality is that a person should honor their mother and father. That is not part of the five precepts or the eight precepts, but there is this other teaching where in many cases, the Buddha emphasized the importance of honoring and caring for mother and father. Here, this, for your reference, this is in the Book of Fours in the Anguttara Nikaya. It has an unfortunate title. It's called the maimed, or the disabled. A person who doesn't care for their mother and father is disabled. But on the positive side, the Buddha said, bhikkhus, behaving rightly towards four persons, the wise, competent, good person, preserves himself unmaimed and uninjured. He is blameless and beyond reproach by the wise, and he generates much merit. What for? Behaving rightly towards his mother. Behaving rightly towards his father. Behaving rightly toward the Tathagata. And behaving rightly towards a disciple of the Tathagata. That person preserves himself unmaimed, uninjured. He is blameless beyond reproach. The person who behaves rightly towards mother, father, towards the enlightened Tathagata, or towards his disciple, generates much merit because of that righteous conduct towards mother and father. The wise praise one in this world, and after death, one rejoices in heaven. What I think is really amazing about this is that mother and father are put on such a high pedestal right next to the Tathagata, right next to the Sammasambuddha, the greatest human being in the entire world, is placed the mother and father as the ones who are the worthy objects for our care and respect, the ones for whom we should happily provide the requisites of life. We should go and bow down to them and respect them. We should wash their feet. We should give them medicine. We should help them with all of the necessities of life, just as we would be so deeply moved and thrilled if we had the opportunity to give something to a Tathagata or to a highly accomplished enlightened being, if we were so lucky in this lifetime to encounter an enlightened person. And so I think it's very, in a way, uplifting to realize how the natural bond of affection that exists between the mother and the baby or the small child, the way that that small child, even to have the first idea about who they are as a person is from gazing into the eyes of the mother and having that connection and seeing something reflected in that relationship. So even our existence as an individual is something that is formed out of that relationship with mother. Everything that we've learned when we were little, not just learning our ABCs, but also learning at the deepest level what it's like to be a human, what it means to be good, what's normal. We got these things when we were very small from the culture that we got at home from mother. There's another reflection that to me always reminds me of something that's we have to struggle to find the feminine side of the Buddhist teachings in a way, because for a long time it's been sort of like presented from a point of view, you could say, I don't know, masculine or intellectual point of view or something like that. But there's one teaching that always struck me as being, this is what a mother should do. And it's about a right effort. Right effort is on the part of the Noble Eightfold Path. It's a training that we have learned. I think you all have heard of this. You're trying to avoid or prevent unwholesome states of mind from arising, or abandon them if they arise. And we should arouse wholesome states of mind that do not exist. And if we see that a wholesome state of mind did arise, we should nurture and develop that wholesome state of mind and bring it to perfection and stability, to the full maturity of its growth. So that's what right effort is. And there's a refrain in the explanation that's given in Pali, which the translation doesn't really bring out the analogy or the metaphor that I'm going to explain to you, but it comes out in the Pali language. It says, Chandan janeti vayamati viryama rabati chittam paganhati parahati. So you arouse the wish, you give birth to a wish, or you give birth to a decision. This is sort of like the creative element in your spiritual practice. This act of making a decision, or of giving birth to an intention, it's a profoundly creative act. And I can compare this as a metaphor that a mother gives birth to a child. So you didn't exist in the form that you're in now as a human being, with the identity that you have now, did not exist. But because of your mother and your father and the role of your parents, they brought you into this world, and that act of creating a child was an act of both courage and creativity. And so let us think about this natural creative force among living beings and bring that natural force to our spiritual practice and arouse, give birth to good intentions, good wishes. The next word in that small phrase is vayamati, which has to do with nurturing and making it grow. So if there's, the when the baby is conceived, you know, there's many different ways that it could not work out. It could come to a miss, and it could never go even come to birth. Or else, if it is born, there's so many different things that could happen with a little infant. Or you could think, like if you plant a seed in the garden, and a little sprout comes up. And so here's your good intention. You gave birth to a good intention that says, oh, you know, I would like to be an arhat. But if it's just a teeny tiny little sprout like that that's so weak, it could die if you don't take care of it. So then you've got to provide the right conditions. You've got to provide protection. You've got to provide the water. You've got to provide the nutriment. You've got to do so many things to protect this weak intention that has come up in your mind that you've created, just the same way that your mother and your parents and caregivers took care of you until you were able to take care of yourself. And so if they could do that for you, can you exert the same kind of motherly care towards your good aspirations and take care of them, feed them, protect them, and let your aspirations grow and become strong? And the next phrase is Viriam Arabati, and this is stirring up strength. So virya is related to vira, like a manly, or a hero. The word hero is related to the word virya. So you would think of going beyond what's easy to do, bringing strength, step on the gas, really go to the ultimate in order to let your aspiration come to its fruition. And if you have ever been a parent, or if you know any parents, including your own, you know that there were many occasions that they had to go way beyond the call of duty. How many times they had to be up all night walking back and forth to take care of you? How many times you got in trouble and they had to do one thing or another to get you out of trouble or to take care of you? How many times they had to sacrifice their own comfort in order to save enough money to put you in school and to give you the things that you needed? So just the same way that mother has got amazing strength, this amazing energy and courage to protect you, to get you out of trouble, and to protect you from harm. Can you arouse the same kind of courage in protecting and going to the ultimate level with your noble aspiration or your highest aspiration, what you want to do in the holy life? So are you willing to do for yourself with the same kind of strength and courage that your mother was willing to do for you? And then the last one is, or the next phrase in that is called Chittan Paganhati, which is usually translated as they exert the mind. The Paganhati has got the literal meaning of taking hold. So if you take the chitta as the heart, you know, the Christian song, lift up your heart. So part of right effort is lift up your heart, get a grip, take hold, be connected. And I think we can reflect about natural mother love and see how mother brings her heart to the work of being a mother. How she has that heart connection with you. And it's because of that heart connection that that mother work is able to be successful. And so then we can again think for ourselves, like, can I bring my heart connection to my practice to take care of myself with as much heart as my mother had in taking care of me? And the last word in this phrase is parahati, which it has the meaning striving, but it's a bit of a pun for me. Pada is feet, and when I was younger, I hiked the Appalachian Trail, and it was one step after another. So in order to get from the beginning to the end of the Appalachian Trail, you just have to keep going. Don't stop. Keep going. So when I started the hike, my brother said, a journey of 1,000 miles starts with one step. And I said, but brother, this is 2,000 miles. And he said, well, it starts with two steps. So then the thing is, if I want to visit you, and if I get on the train when I'm allowed to get on the train, if I get off in Novato, I won't be able to see you because I didn't go the whole way. I stopped partway and I got lost or confused or forgot what I was doing. And so the parahati is go the distance, go the whole way, and don't stop until the work is done. And again, this is something I think that what adults do for children, what families do for each other, that they will keep going and continue month in and month out, winter, spring, summer, fall, year in and year out. They continue doing the ever-changing, whatever it is that's their duty that needs to be done in order to help the child or the children to move along in this life until they're able to become independent. And so then just the same way, if I try to do for my practice as my mother did for me, let me try to not give up, not get lost, not just go halfway and get tired. Can you imagine if mother and father really enjoyed having a little small children, but they didn't like teenagers? And so then when you get to be like 12 or 13 years old, they say, well, this is not really working out. Can you go somewhere else or something like that? So, but we don't do that. That's not what a normal family does. And just the same way, our path goes through many twists and turns, many stages of evolution. Maybe at the beginning, our path is very inspiring and we feel so thrilled at the progress that we're making. And then later on, we may get a little bit like lazy in our practice, and we're sort of like drifting and not making an effort anymore or distracted. But we got to just remember to go the whole way. So in this way, by arousing energy, making it grow, exerting ourselves, using our heart and going the distance. We can nurture our own spiritual path the same way that if we are a parent, we nurture the children, or the same way if we were a child, that our parents nurtured us. So the Pali again is Chandang Jane Tivayamati Viriyangarabati Chittam Panganhati Parahati. So I think there's a whole 30 minutes left in this time. I can give you another metaphor, or I can ask for invite your questions and comments. What do you think? Who wants another metaphor? Yes, okay, here comes another metaphor. This is part of the five reflections for everybody. And it's also part of the 10 reflections for a monastic. I am the owner of my karma, born of my karma, abide supported by my karma, related to my karma. Whatever karma I shall do, whether for good or for ill, of that I will be the heir. When I say, I am the owner of my karma, this always seemed a little bit weird to me, because in Buddhism, when we study about non-self, in so many different ways, different things that come up, we're trying to think, oh, this is not me, not mine, not myself. And so why is it that in this case, the sutta is telling us, I'm the owner of my karma? It's a kind of a puzzle, isn't it? But actually, if you look at the language, it gives the metaphors are giving metaphors of family life. So in family life, I'm the owner of my family name. I'm born from my family. And I have a destiny to take over the family business and to inherit the wealth of the family. And so people think that their family and the material things that are connected to the family, the wealth of the family, are the things that are mine. And so what the Buddha is saying is, actually, your family is not yours. Your wealth is not yours. The family business is not yours. Even your family name is not yours. None of those things are yours. The only thing which is yours is your karma, meaning the intentional actions that you do and the fruit thereof. So when it says, I'm the owner of my karma, it says, kamasaka, kamasako me. So I am a kamasaka. You could say that's my family name. I'm a kama person, like it's like being Johnson. I'm the kama daughter. I'm the daughter of my kama, and that becomes my name. That's my kamasaka. And then it says, kama yoni. The yoni is the womb. So it's like the fruition of the previous kama is sort of like a matrix, and I am born with, let's say, the genetic pattern of belonging to this species, like I'm a human being and I have all of the equipment that a human being gets, and I also have a lot of particular things in the matrix that comes from my family or the culture, whatever circumstance I'm born into. So in this way, we could say that we are born into a pattern of our previous karma. That's the karma yoni. The karma is the womb that we come from. And then the karma bandhu, the bandhu has one meaning is a support or a bond. And another meaning of that word is those people who have the obligation to take care of you. So your father or your whatever person is your legal guardian is your bandhu. That's their job and their duty to take care of you. So your karma is also taking care of you. And then karma patisarana, it's like the karma is my relatives. And again, it's like it's another, it's sort of this beautiful metaphor, like the extended family. We might, like in real life, most people who haven't studied it or really reflected about it or had a chance to learn, assume that like their extended family is part of their identity. That the kind of person they are, I'm the child of those ones and the niece of those ones and the sibling of those ones. And all of these relations are part of who I am. But we know that relatives are impermanent and that can't be relied on because it won't last. Eventually we'll be separated by death. But our karma is like our family. So karma is not one thing. There's many different karmas that have happened in the past. And every day you do many different intentional things. In one day, you might do a certain number of really noble and beautiful, mindful and wise, intentional actions, creating good karma. And you might do a certain number of karmas that are just done habitually without thinking, that are affected by delusion. Or you might do a certain number of karmas that are just knee-jerk reactions coming out of greed and aversion. So there's a whole mixture of different karmas, and you could think of them as like living in a crowded house with a lot of different relations, and they're all kind of like different. And so this is the actual family you live with is not very important, but the karma that you live with is quite significant and can have the decisive impact both on your happiness and also on your opportunity to practice and develop wisdom. So doing wholesome karma, having a preponderance of karmas that are freed from greed, hatred, and delusion, which are under the influence of wisdom and the thought of non-harming, the thought of kindness, those karmas are conducive to happiness and also conducive to a safe and calm mind, which is the mind which is then able to practice and has a chance to make some progress in the Dhamma. So the karma is your relatives. And then whatever karma I do, for good or for ill, of that karma, I will be the heir. And even in the early commentary on this passage, what they say is that just the same way that a person could go on a long trip and then subsequently, it might be a year later or many months later, they finally find their way back home. And then their friends and relatives will come out and greet them and welcome them back home. Just the same way, whatever karma that we do is like, then at the end of this life, if we are reborn and we come to another state of existence, all of the kamas that we did before will be there to greet us, just like all of those long-lost friends and relatives come out to greet us. And so you would hope that it would be a friendly and a warm reception of loving and beneficial relations who will give you a beautiful welcome instead of some kind of a hostile tribe who is not supportive for your welfare. So here again, what I can emphasize is what we are developing in the Dhamma is very deep and very difficult to understand, very subtle. And yet we know for sure that what the Buddha realized and what the noble arahants realize is something that a human being is able to realize. It's coming from the capacity, the characters, the tendencies that we have as a human being are the very same capacities and tendencies that we have to develop in order to find our way along this path until we get to a space with enough calm and clarity, with enough seclusion from afflictive states to be able to look ever more deeply and to have the chance for insight to arise. But this path of training towards gradually getting freed from the afflictive states, freed from the negative tendencies, freed from being a victim of our own greed, hatred, and delusion. This path comes from recognizing our inclination towards goodness, towards love, towards non-harming, towards compassion. And then developing and favoring and valuing those tendencies. And so the Buddha very often did take metaphors from the relationship of the mother to the only child, as in the Karaniya Metta Sutta, or the different relationships and situations that we have in the family life. And this is one way that we know that this path is attainable to us. I hope that you would remember to use the warm love that you have for your mother, or the love that you have for your children, the love that you have for the people who are lovable in your life, and let that be a starting point, which then can be expanded and becoming ever more inclusive, and then including people who you didn't naturally care about, who are not that lovable or not that easy to love, until finally your practice is so mature that it can become boundless. And with that practice of boundless loving kindness, it's possible to enter into samadhi and to develop the kind of a deep meditation, which is really secluded from affliction. And that is a very powerful place for wisdom and insight to take root. And we are so lucky and blessed that we each had a mother who helped us when we were little. So now I've really come to the end of my talk, and I thank you for your patient listening. If somebody has a question, if you put yourself hands up in Anjali so that I can recognize who's talking and unmute yourself, I'd be happy to hear a question or your comment about how the gifts that you received from mother or the relationship from your mother is something that actually is part of the basis for your spiritual success. Okay, Chris.
Hi, I'm Chris. My mom died on January 26th of this year. She was in the rest home at the Tamil Pious in Greenbrae. And this is the first Mother's Day I've ever spent without her. And it touched me deeply. And your talk touched me deeply. And just being with her the last 2 weeks of her life, as she transitioned, was a powerful experience. And I was really glad that I was there for it. And it really brought home the teachings of old age, sickness, and death. And I was really glad to be able to help my mom in the last 5 years. She was 95 when she died. And you know, as she was there for me in my first 5 years of life, I could be there for her in her last 5 years of life. And as she's been there for me always. And so, you know, the Buddhist teachings really come to life in action, in being engaged with, and I'm really glad that I was able to experience this, although it was traumatic. She was in a COVID lockdown, a facility at assisted living and skilled nursing at the Greenbrae rest home in isolation. And with every really possible bad thing around this. And my practice was able to, you know, center me so I could be there for her. And even when I wasn't there, I was there for her. So anyway, I hope that answers your question. Thanks.
Thank you so much. And you've reminded us that if we are so lucky that we have the opportunity to give that care to a parent towards the end of their life, that this really is such a step up in our ethical maturity to have the opportunity to give back. Corey.
I'll just say, I'm just loving the metta chant, the even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings. It's always been a real special couple of lines for me. So,
yes. I think we'll be chanting that in a few minutes. Brenda.
Hello, Aya. Thank you for the talk this evening. I just want to say that, you know, this path, this Buddhist path, is the path that impressed upon me the gratitude I should have for my own parents, but on this day, my mother, who is still alive at 95, and I have reflected so much on how lucky I am to have this woman as my mother. And I have to say that without the Buddhist practice, I don't think I ever would have come to the point where I was as grateful for her life as I am now. I just think that the stress that the Buddha gave us, his directive to reflect on all of the ways that we owe a debt to our parents has just enhanced my life by making my own internal relationship with my mom much richer than it ever would have been. And so many people have lost their mothers recently, and I just feel like completely blessed that mine is still alive and mentally and physically quite well. She spent much of her life as a nurse caring for people of all ages. You know, she started off in pediatrics and she ended up in old age homes. And every step of the way, she enjoyed doing that kind of caretaking. And I feel as though that has probably contributed to her karma of having a long life. Yeah. So thank you for the opportunity of allowing us to reflect even more on Mother's Day about this.
Thank you, Brenda. Thank you for your kind words.